for hour number two of the Bible study. The Ask the Pastor Hour, the numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If you'd like to join us here with a question or comment for our guest, he is Pastor Jeff Alexander, pastor at Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Greenwood, Indiana. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning, Chuck.
How are you, sir?
Doing great. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. You know, I'm still trying to figure out how Mount Olive is the name of a church. We expect St. Paul, St. John,
right,
you know,
right.
Things like that. Mount Olive is a town just north of where you and I grew up here.
That's right, yeah.
What is Mount Olive? Where does that come from?
Well, you know, obviously it comes from the scriptures about Jesus spending time with his disciples on the Mount of Olives. But I believe that there are two reasons why the founders of our church, who started our church back in 1994 and 95, named it Mount Olive. One is that the original plot of land that they looked to build on is on a road called Olive Branch Road.
Ah.
And so I think they were building on that. And second thing, this is kind of a guess, but there are two large congregations right in our area, one called Mount Pleasant Christian Church and one called Mount Auburn Methodist Church. And so I'm guessing that we also wanted to kind of fit in the trend there and call ourselves Mount Olive. And obviously has scriptural reasons too, but that's the name for us, and have borne that name since 94 and 95 when we were planted as a mission church.
Okay, enough of this happy talk.
Yes.
Let's talk about something not so happy. You know, I might have to take a vacation here. The culture is just, it's becoming very challenging, as I'm sure you know as a pastor. There's a story on the Associated Press out yesterday, and the headline is lawsuit: Florida clinic botched abortion, threw out live baby. Does that get your attention?
Oh, yes.
This is from Tampa, Florida. 18 years old and pregnant, Cycloria Williams went to an abortion clinic outside Miami and paid $1,200 for Dr. Pierre Jean-Jacques Renelique to terminate her 23-week pregnancy. 3 days later, she sat in a reclining chair, medicated to dilate her cervix and otherwise get her ready for the procedure. Only Dr. Renelique did not arrive in time. According to Williams and the Florida Department of Health, she went into labor and delivered a live baby girl. What Williams and the health department say happened next has shocked people on both sides of the abortion debate. One of the clinic's owners, who has no medical license, cut the infant's umbilical cord. Williams says the woman placed the baby in a plastic biohazard bag and threw it out. Police recovered the decomposing remains in a cardboard box a week later after getting anonymous tips. Tom Pennekamp, a Miami attorney representing Williams in her lawsuit against Dr. Renelique and the clinic owners, said, quote, "I don't care what your politics are, what your morals are, this should not be happening in our community." The State Board of Medicine is to hear Renelique's case in Tampa on Friday and determine whether to strip his license. The State Attorney's Homicide Division is investigating, though no charges have been filed. Terry Chavez, a spokeswoman with the Miami-Dade County State's Attorney's Office, said this week that prosecutors were nearing a decision. Renelique's attorney, Joseph Harrison, called the allegations at best, quote, "misguided and incomplete," unquote, in an email to the Associated Press. He did not provide further details. The case has riled the anti-abortion community, which contends the clinic's actions constitute murder. Tom Breca, president of the Thomas More Society, a law firm that is also representing Williams, said, "The baby was just treated as a piece of garbage. People all over the country are just aghast." Are you aghast, Pastor Alexander?
I'm disgusted. I hadn't come across that story just yet, but that is it is terrible.
Oh, well, another day at the abortion clinic, I guess. My first thought when I saw this story was, if you are pro-choice,
mm-hmm.
you still have to be aghast at this story. Don't you? Or maybe not. I don't know.
I would certainly think so. Did it mention in that story, was the woman who gave birth, was she aware of what was happening to the baby she had just delivered?
Well, you know how it is. It says here in the story, as she sat in the chair, as they were preparing to do the abortion, she was medicated. Now, I don't know what that means. You can take medication which is specifically designed to, as it says here, dilate her cervix. But you can have medication which, you know, puts you sort of
right.
in a twilight zone so that you're
right.
not completely out. But you may not be fully aware, mm-hmm. in full possession of your faculties as to what is happening to you. It does not make that clear.
Right. Well, this is one of those bizarre stories of where I think, I would guess, that the majority of people on both sides of the abortion issue would admit this is irresponsible with a capital I and is also infanticide. So it is obviously taking the life of an infant, newborn child. I don't know how you can deny that. Where I, as a pro-life, anti-abortion person, would go with it, would say, okay, so the moment before that child left the body of the mother, that child would not be a living child, apparently, but then within a matter of seconds, once the child was totally delivered, it would now all of a sudden be a normal human being with rights. And I think that that's where the debate comes down to. When is a child a living human being, and what about the rights for all people, for life, liberty, and the ultimate pursuit of happiness?
You know, I just don't know where to go with this.
Mm-hmm.
This is, now you described yourself as a pro-life, anti-abortion person.
Yes.
So you and I are like-minded in that mm-hmm. way.
Right.
Now this woman who went to the clinic to have her 23-week baby aborted, and what's full term is like 39 weeks, I think, something like that.
Right.
So this baby is fairly well along. She goes to the abortion clinic to kill her baby.
Mm-hmm.
Now the baby is born, and the story is careful to point out the umbilical cord is cut. That means that that connection
mm-hmm.
to the mother
mm-hmm.
is been terminated.
Right.
Now she has an attorney,
mm-hmm.
and she is suing the doctor. He was late. He wasn't even there. The
right.
doctor wasn't even there. She's
right.
suing the doctor. She's suing the clinic. The Thomas More Society, a law firm that is also represented, she's going after this clinic with all she's got.
Mm-hmm. Where she was just wanting to use
why?
That clinic.
Because they killed her baby?
Right.
Isn't that why she went to the clinic?
Yeah, that's where the hypocrisy is pretty much laid out there in the open for us, is that you see a person who, for one reason or another, went there to quote-unquote terminate a pregnancy and to end the life of a preborn child. But then all of a sudden where they see an opportunity to perhaps get a lot of money out of the situation, then they all of a sudden that place is evil. Where, yes, we believe that place is evil all the way along, whether they're killing a baby that was just born or killing a baby that is preborn.
I'm just scratching my head in bewilderment
sure.
over the Tom Breca, that's B-R-E-J-C-H-A, I'm pronouncing it Breca. He is the president of the Thomas More Society, which is identified in this AP story as a law firm that is representing Williams, the mother. And he is quoted as saying, the baby was just treated as a piece of garbage. Help me out here.
Right.
Isn't that what
well, what's interesting about the Thomas
about?
More Society is that it's a pro-life law center. It's a pro-life law center who is a society that is supposed to speak on behalf of the unborn. So what's interesting is that a person going in to have an abortion, now all of a sudden when it becomes convenient and expedient for their purposes, turns to people with a pro-life agenda to support them. That's bizarre. This story is, more is going to come out on this one. This will be an interesting one to watch.
Well, I do agree with Tom Pennekamp. He's the Miami attorney who is representing Williams in her lawsuit against the doctor and the clinic owners. He says, I don't care what your politics are, what your morals are, this should not be happening in our community.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree with that.
Sure.
So this is just so bizarre, so inverted, it's so weird. It's hard to maintain your bearings here.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of sympathy do you feel for this mother?
Well, I think it's important as a Christian person that strives to serve people with the compassion of Jesus Christ, to first and foremost operate in a spirit of forgiveness and compassion and love. Now, everything within me that I see in my sinful nature wants to lash out at a person because, like we have just talked about, you ultimately automatically see hypocrisy. You see whatever is convenient they're doing. It just seems to be a huge double standard for this woman. At the same time, I think that you ultimately feel compassion towards a person who is obviously a broken person, a confused person, a broken person, a person in need of help. And I pray that there are people there in her community in Florida that will have a chance to reach out to her with the love of Christ and give her hope and provide for her healing through the forgiveness of sins that Jesus has to offer. That's what I hope for her as a Christian, as a pastor, as a person whose life has been changed by the compassion of Jesus Christ. I hope for the same for this woman.
Do you think that the person here who is identified as putting the live baby into a biohazard bag and throwing it out?
Yeah.
Should be charged.
Absolutely.
And prosecuted for,
to the full extent
from,
of the law, and I'm sure that is what's going to be the debate is over. The debate will probably, and as the news comes out on this, it will be interesting to really see that the media will probably focus more upon that woman who was working at the clinic and the decision that she made to go ahead and cut the cord, place the child in the Ziploc bag and throw it out with the rest of the trash. And so I think it will focus on her. Probably it's saying, okay, well, and what they won't say is, okay, well, what would have motivated a person working under the authority of a doctor, such as Rena Leek, what would have motivated her to actually make that decision in the absence of the doctor, in the absence of anybody kind of telling her what exactly to do, but she obviously felt that that was what she needed to do as a person who is employed in this kind of industry, which I believe speaks to the fact, and you won't see this in the media, that ultimately that industry is a culture of death. It's all about what is expedient, it's all about what is convenient, and ultimately is one that is not a culture of life and hope, but is of death. And you see that those decisions are made because that's the environment that they're used to working and operating within.
So if you were the person, you couldn't be the person. You would never do this. But
you know,
I don't know how.
Hypothetically speaking,
I don't know how to ask you to,
sure.
Walk in the shoes of some of these people as you try to think this through. But if you were the person, there you are. You're working in the abortion clinic,
right?
And you're working for Dr. Rena Leek. He has a physician's license.
Mm-hmm.
It's legal to have abortions,
mm-hmm.
and you're looking at your watch, and you're looking at your watch, and the doctor doesn't arrive, and oh no, all of a sudden, the baby arrives,
sure.
And we got a problem.
Panic strikes, right, Chuck?
So you cut the umbilical cord, mm-hmm. you put the baby in a plastic bag, you throw it out, and I don't know what the penalty is for murder here, and I don't know how the prosecutors are going to go after this, but I'm assuming that this is, killing a baby is a pretty serious crime in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You could go to jail for life.
Right.
Now, you're going to go to, let's just think worst case scenario for this person. You're going to go to jail for the rest of your life because you murdered a live baby who just maybe 10 minutes before, if the doctor had arrived and killed the baby, everything would be fine. How can a rational person explain that to anybody?
But
they do all the time.
But they are not rational. If they would want to explain away their actions such as this, I believe that they are completely irrational, that they're off their rocker, that they are irrational, that they've got bigger problems than we know how to deal with. What is interesting is that you got to wonder if maybe that employee who made that fatal decision will actually turn to a pro-life society such as Thomas More herself, a group of people who could maybe advocate, look, you know, how is this, maybe would argue, how is this different than partial birth abortion, a procedure which is being debated in the courts, which many pro-abortion politicians favor being allowed in the 50 states. Certain states have restrictions on partial birth. It's a gruesome procedure where a child basically is partially brought out of the womb and then is quote unquote aborted, or as I would say would be murdered. But how different, just a matter of inches between a legal procedure, as you were saying, versus what here could cost this woman a life in prison. And so it would be interesting to see who she gets counsel from. I would guess that she will probably be talking to some of the pro-life advocates who will kind of argue from a stance of partial birth is allowed. Why is this not allowed? And in their process, they will use that to their advantage of pointing out the double standard that currently exists throughout the United States of America, is as we allow abortion, even late-term abortion procedures to take place. But this, just moments later, we would sentence someone to life in prison for. That is a huge double standard, and it exposes a major problem in American culture today.
Well, I submit myself to your correction, and I admit I am playing devil's advocate here.
Sure.
A little bit. But I'm thinking about this woman.
Uh-huh.
Now, here's what the story says. What Williams and the health department say happened next has shocked people on both sides of the abortion debate. One of the clinic's owners, who has no medical license, cut the infant's umbilical cord. Williams says the woman placed the baby in a plastic biohazard bag and threw it out. In those two sentences, the inference is that the woman who placed the baby in the bag is one of the clinic's owners. Although I would feel, from a journalistic perspective, compelled to confirm that assumption. But that's what the way the story reads.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not just talking about, you know, some minimum wage janitor who, cleans up the clinic after the procedure is over. We're talking about an owner, somebody who has some semblance of responsibility and, I guess, business acumen,
mm-hmm.
who threw this out. I'm thinking to myself, on that morning, when that person rose from sleep and got ready to, quote-unquote, go to work, that person probably had no idea that her life, would be radically changed on that day. Why? Because the doctor was late, didn't arrive on time. It wasn't, quote-unquote, her fault that the doctor didn't show up. And now you have this consequence of a live baby, and what do we do with it? Well, here's what we do at this place. We kill babies.
Right. We save our business.
We
do what we have to do to maintain our image in this, and we don't want to be known as the place that botches abortions. We want to follow through so we can continue making money.
Now, you would think, from a rational standpoint, you'd like to think that the one option that's not available here in a rational society, in a rational setting, is, well, we'll put the baby in a bag and throw it out.
Right.
Except for this person is surrounded by killing babies.
Right.
You know, hundreds a week probably.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Exactly.
So if we permit the killing of babies, should we be so surprised that this owner did what she did?
No. It's a culture of death.
Therefore, can she be excused, Pastor?
I'm not talking about your
right hand kingdom sensibilities here. I'm talking about your left hand kingdom sensibilities.
Right. Well, we'll see what happens with the story goes and see what wiggle room the law provides. I don't see a whole lot when it comes to this person who places a born child in a bag and tosses it out. I can't imagine there being much wiggle room in the laws of the state of Florida for that. But I agree with you, Chuck. This person is operating in a business culture that ultimately is a culture of death. And I don't believe there's
anything
rational about
that. They kill babies. That's what they do. That's their business.
Right.
They kill babies.
Exactly. What a sad statement.
So they killed another one. This one just happened to be ill-timed.
I guess you can irrationally rationalize that many different ways. It's kind of hard to put yourself in their mind and in their shoes, isn't it?
All right, let me ask you
this
question.
You're good at that, though, Chuck.
Let me, well, I'm just trying to think it through, Pastor.
That's right.
Now, let me ask you this question. As unfortunate and as gross as this story is, it does present those of us who are on the pro-life side of the argument an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
We can shine the light of truth on this story, and we can go after the pro-abortion, pro-choice people with all we've got based on this unfortunate outcome. Is that an appropriate thing to do, Pastor? Take advantage of all of this misfortune to advance our own personal pro-life agenda?
I don't think we want to take advantage of people, take advantage of broken people making terrible mistakes, but at the same time, I do think we use any point for leverage that we can to point out and expose a hypocrisy that exists not only in the abortion industry, but also in the thinking and in the laws of the United States of America. Just as surely as we would jump on an opportunity to point out to people that, for example, here in the state of Indiana, there has been talk in the newspapers the past couple weeks about harder penalties for people who would kill a pregnant woman, as stiffer penalties for that, because they would be charged with not only the death of the pregnant person, but also with the unborn child. And so I think that's an example where here locally, many people in the pro-life movement point out, well, why such hard penalties for a person who will take the life of an unborn child, when all of a sudden when that child is taken to an abortion clinic, it's not an unborn child all of a sudden, it's just a fetus, it's just a bunch of cells, it's just something that can be discarded and thrown away and forgotten. And so I think that we use any opportunity we can to have that discussion, have that debate, have that opportunity to hopefully, Lord willing, open the eyes of some to see the double standard and the hypocrisy that exists in this, what I believe is a culture of death.
So what should happen to the doctor, in your opinion, Pastor Alexander?
The doctor ultimately needs to be responsible. If something happens, as one who oversees that practice there, he's going to be held responsible for it one way or another. Now, I don't know all the ins and outs of the abortion industry, and apparently the story said that the person who actually did the gruesome thing was somehow an owner of it, so they would be responsible too. But I certainly think that there's a lot of responsibility to go around, and I don't think that the woman who gave birth to the child should be off the hook either.
Ooh. So,
do you
think that the doctor should lose his license and never be allowed to be a doctor again?
Well, I think he could probably argue his way out of that, don't you? The fact that, well, he wasn't there, he wasn't aware of it.
Oh, he's going to argue.
Sure.
But I'm. There's a blog associated with this story, and there's a doctor who has posted information, and his first sentence is, "Take his medical license away."
Yeah.
Now, that's his career.
That means
all of his work, everything that he studied for and leading up to being a doctor, gone.
Just like that.
Just because he was late. Let's talk about it on the other side of the break. Stay with us.
A bequest or other estate gift is a wonderful way that you can help support the ministry of AM 850 KFUO Radio long after the Lord calls you home. KFUO staff of gift planning experts can help you understand the process for creating a Christian estate plan and the benefits it offers for you, your family, and the ministries you care about. If you'd like more information, contact Dorothy Kessner at AM 850 KFUO.
The Christ-centered programs you hear every day on AM 850 KFUO are made possible by the generous giving of friends like David and Judy Allen of Santee, California, Jim and Judy Gibbert of Redbud, Illinois, Alberta Heineke of Steelville, Illinois, and the Reverend Mark and Lana Hawkinson of New Haven, Missouri. Your faithful support for AM 850 KFUO ensures the future of our radio ministry.
A butterfly with landing lights. Get the details next on today's Creation Moments. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
Though tiny, the scales of the swallowtail butterfly's wing are similar in design to light-emitting diodes, or LEDs. We say similar because the design is closer to a more specialized light-emitting diode that puts out 6 times as much light as the standard LED. The blue-green wing of the swallowtail is covered with millions of tiny scales. Each microscopic scale has 3 layers. The top layer is made up of thousands of hollow cylinders shaped into a honeycomb pattern. There is fluorescent pigment within the sides of each of those cells. The second layer adds the blue-green color to entering light, and the bottom layer reflects it back out. As the light enters the top layer of the honeycomb cell, it focuses and reflects all the blue-green light that enters it. The second layer turns any other color entering, including ultraviolet light, blue-green, and the bottom layer reflects it back out. The efficiency of the delicate structure has been compared to LEDs that have 2-dimensional photonic crystals that put out 6 times as much light as a regular LED. As one scientist put it, they had no idea that the design would be so precise and refined. Of course it's precise and refined. It shows an understanding of light. It was designed by the same creator who created light in the first place.
For a printed transcript of today's program, visit our website at creationmoments.com or call us toll-free at 1-800-42-BIBLE. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
As is our custom, the next Law and Gospel is Open Mic Friday. Your questions and comments are welcome on any subject of a spiritual nature, such as additional Bible passage that require the distinctions between law and gospel.
Listen to Law and Gospel weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on AM 850 KFUO.
Hi, this is Dr. Bill Meyer for Focus on the Family's Weekend Magazine. Coming up this weekend, why it's so important to have a friendship with your spouse. And will a new baby impact your relationship? Plus, the dangers of pleasure overload. That's all coming up on Weekend Magazine.
Saturday morning at 10:04 on AM 850 KFUO.
Listen to the Bible study. I've just been surly and mean today. I guess I should confess and apologize. We got the Abimelech story in the Judges chapter 9. And what a jerk he was. And Gail is bad and just put me in a surly mood.
I feel sorry for your wife when you go home from work today, Chuck.
Well, my wife is in Honduras. You know, they're taking that Honduras trip.
Well, maybe that's the problem,
Chuck. So she's safe. Yeah.
Your better half is in Central America.
There's something to be said for that, I think.
Yes.
She probably would calm me down. Now, I've gone to the Associated Press for an update here. And for your information, the story that I read to you before is actually from Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
The AP is reporting today, and I'll just read the story. A Florida agency has revoked the license of a doctor accused of medical malpractice in the botched abortion in which authorities say a live baby was placed in the trash. The Florida Board of Medicine today found Dr. Pierre Jean-Jacques Rodelique guilty of medical malpractice in delegating responsibility to an unlicensed personnel. An administrative complaint said Rodelique was scheduled to perform an abortion on a teenager, blah, blah, blah. And so the question I put to you right before the break, should he lose his license, I guess apparently has been answered.
Right.
So your thoughts on his losing that license?
Yeah, I mean, you're responsible for what takes place in your practice. And so I think they know what they're doing. Just a terrible situation, any way you look at it.
Do you feel sorry for the doctor, Pastor Alexander? You know, here he is just running an abortion business, minding his own business, and he's a little late. You know, as for some reason, I guess they began procedures on this woman, perhaps in a way that didn't fit his timing, and
right.
And he was late, and now
he
can't be a doctor anymore. Now, is that fair?
Yeah. Well, it's hard for me to sympathize with an abortion doctor, plain and simple.
Okay, well said. Now. Well, we need to turn this coin over here because
sure.
I only got 20 minutes left. Because we've got a situation on the other side of the fence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, down in Florida, they're killing babies in the abortion clinic there, and they made a mistake, and they wound up having to kill a live baby. And so now there are a lot of people in trouble down there. On the other side of the coin, you have this woman in Whittier, California,
right.
who has given birth to 8 children.
Right.
Now, she has finally, the press is getting to this woman to find out what her thinking was so that she can sort of explain herself. The Associated Press is reporting this. Here's the story. Nadia Suleiman says having a huge family was always a dream of hers. The California mother of octuplets told NBC's Today Show she longed for certain connections and attachments. Let me put the quotation marks in here. She longed for, quote, certain connections and attachments with another person, unquote, that she lacked growing up. She says her childhood as an only child was pretty dysfunctional. State documents, however, quote her as suggesting she had a happy childhood. Suleiman has stirred up an ethical debate about fertility treatments after it was revealed she already had 6 children before giving birth to the octuplets. She says all 14 of her children were born by in vitro fertilization from sperm donated by a friend. Suleiman's publicist says she's feeling great and looking forward to being reunited with her octuplets, who were born prematurely last month. They're expected to remain in the hospital for several more weeks. So over in Florida, we've got a woman who wanted to kill her baby.
Right.
And they did, but now she's not happy about that. And out in California, we've got a woman who had a friend do in vitro fertilization for her so she could have 8 children at once. And this was having a huge family, quote unquote, was always a dream of hers. So I guess what's going on in California balances out what went on in Florida there. Somebody's having babies somewhere. Is that the way we're to look at this?
I tell you, it is very interesting how those are two contrasted situations. And what I find very interesting about this story that has gotten a lot of media attention about the mother, Nadia Suleiman, and those babies, is that people on both sides of the abortion issue, I don't sense that they're making that the issue. I think that people on both sides of the abortion fence, whether they be pro-life or pro-choice, kind of have their antennae that kind of go up on this one and say, okay, maybe this goes more into the realm of medical ethics, reproductive ethics, something that, you know, my friend and your friend Bob Weiss over at Concordia Seminary would probably be all over and love to talk about as far as how this takes place with in vitro fertilization and the ethics that are behind that or the lack thereof. I'm still troubled by this whole situation because the big part of me says, you know, I believe that children should have a right to life. You know, how can I backpedal on that stance that I feel where children should have a right to be born and a right to live and to have a full life and we should enable women to give birth to children. Yet at the same time, should we set up this opportunity for a person to make a decision where they will, you know, have this in vitro fertilization producing 8 children. And I know the medical community, the medical ethics community are all over this, and it's a very interesting thing that I don't think is going to fade away from the media spotlight here anytime real soon.
Let's take some phone calls here, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and talk with Linda. You're on the Bible study. Good morning.
Hi, Brother Radford. Hi, Pastor.
Good morning.
I guess I shouldn't have called because I'm like you, Brother Radford. This is really hurting me.
Mm-hmm.
And we have such wonderful doctors. And in the pro-life, you know, the people like us who are pro-life, should we be calling this man a doctor? Is there some other way we could reference these people? And another thing, I keep hearing you pastors say this was a terrible mistake. Well, you know, it's a sin. And I think Christians need to say sin. We talk about that in our class all the time.
Linda, where have you been? We can't say sin. It's intolerant. It's judgmental. What are you thinking?
Well, you know
Sorry,
what?
I
like,
lost it there.
Like, there is no little sin.
Right.
And when like in my class, if this discussion goes to how bad the world is, I have to bring them back to what they think of as a little sin, and I'll have to point out little sins so that we realize we're all in the same boat, but we do have to call sin, sin. And I guess these people every day, they're handling babies like that every day. But in James it says, let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. And when lust has conceived, it bringeth forth sin. And sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. They don't even realize what sin is. It's just like they have been conditioned and they don't even see it as sin. So, and what can we call these people instead of calling them doctor? And what can we say instead of terrible mistake? See, it's a sin, huh?
All right. Thanks for the call. Pastor?
Yeah, it's terrible depravity. It is utterly sinful.
Depravity?
Yeah. And as we talked about, Chuck, and certainly not denying that this is terribly sinful, but this is a violation of the fifth commandment, that you shall not murder. And so this is clearly a sin. I believe that the abortion industry is a sinful industry. You know, it carries on abortion under the disguise of doing what's right for a woman who doesn't want to be inconvenienced by the birth of a child. I mean, it does that again and again. It is clearly sin. And as the caller pointed out, people that operate in such a culture as that, they don't think anything of it after a while. Talks about in the Bible how hearts become hardened and darkened because all we know is sin, and so therefore we get so used to the dark that we forget about the light.
Here's another caller at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Beverly, you're on the Bible study.
Oh, good morning. I wanted to agree with the pastor on one point about the woman having the abortion, being troubled. And then I wanted to add to that we really don't know all the facts.
Right.
You know, there could be the father that's actually bringing those charges, and because, you know, it takes, a male and a female. And we need to, if there's something about our society as a whole, the entire situation, when, you know, we're having, you know, children and that people don't want, mm-hmm. You know, they don't want the child because the child is a blessing.
Right.
From God. And
that's right.
And if we're trying to kill our children, it says something about us. Wow. Us, the men and the women of society.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that, Beverly. I agree. There's a lot more to any story that you read about in the newspaper. Obviously, there's the human relation dynamic to that story that oftentimes doesn't get any attention. And there's always a lot more than meets the eye that we use to read the newspaper or read the websites. And so there's a lot going on there. And obviously, it's a broken situation. It's a sinful situation. And also, I believe, you know, you see that there are some broken people involved there. And going back to the situation with the octuplets in California, what I find most interesting about that is what the woman is now saying, where Nadia is saying, you know, I've always needed affection. I've lacked love in my life, and I felt that having more kids would give that to me. And I think that speaks to an area where we as the Church of Jesus Christ can really minister to a need in society, and that is to equip families to actually reach out in love and care for each other, and to really teach people in a very basic, simple way what it means to live within the family unit, which is God's gift to us of moms and dads and children.
Let's listen to this less than a minute piece from the Today Show where Nadia Suleiman spoke out on this current situation.
So I took a risk. It's a gamble. It always is. And a lot of couples, usually it's couples, do undergo this procedure, you know, and it's not as controversial because they're couples, so it's more acceptable to society. For me, I feel as though I've been under the microscope because I've chosen this unconventional kind of life. You know, I didn't intend on it being unconventional, it turned out to be. All I wanted was children. I wanted to be a mom. That's all I ever wanted in my life. I love my children.
And you knew that you were not going to selectively reduce.
Oh, no. Sometimes when we have that dream and that passion, and we take risks. And I did. And it turned out perfectly.
Your thoughts?
You have to admire someone who loves to be a mom. And I think that the thing that's kind of frightening is that you kind of wonder where, how do you put it? Because you hear things from Nadia's parents, and then you hear things from Nadia, and you just kind of fear for those kids who are growing up in a home where, for crying out loud, grandma and mom get on the airwaves, and they start saying polar opposite things to each other about the whole situation. And obviously we want people to be raised in homes where they are loved by their mothers, by their fathers, by grandmas, grandpas, you name it. So I'm not to judge a love of a parent for their children, though I do agree that this is a very bizarre situation.
Well, at the risk of being the skunk at the picnic, which, as you well know, I stole from Bob Weiss.
That's right. That's right.
I'm shocked that this woman, she has tried to position herself as a victim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because she went the quote-unquote unconventional way, she said.
Mm-hmm.
It's not her fault that she's not a part of a couple. She says if couples do this, then practically nobody says anything, but she doesn't have a husband, so...
Though I read in the newspaper here, the Indianapolis Star this morning, that apparently the doctor who administered this process and this procedure to Nadia is kind of under questioning and observation, because apparently there's some law in California that if a person is under the age of 35, they are not allowed a certain number of eggs to be implanted. Is that an aspect of the story that comes in here too,
I have not seen that.
Okay.
So that's...
I know that's another angle of it. But what's interesting is that so often you hear people say that, well, you know, I'm just the victim here, and people are out to get me, and I'm the victim. And never having walked a day in Nadia Suleiman's shoes, I can't say that, you know, that feeling is invalid, because I'm sure she does feel victimized by what people are saying and blogging about and the comments that she's hearing. And I'm not to judge her heart. She has one judge, and that's not me. But at the same time, I think that there is that feeling in society where, what about personal responsibility? That kind of seems to get thrown out here, that ultimately you are personally responsible for the decisions that you make. Yet we want to shirk that responsibility again and again. No matter what happens, it's always somebody else's fault, isn't it, Chuck? Don't you see that again and again? That seems to be a common theme of what we read in the papers and these stories that come out.
Well, if you listen to her words there, she is, I think, claiming victim status because it's not her fault that there's no father involved, because people do in vitro fertilization. And because she did it without a husband involved, that's not her fault.
Right.
And it's not her fault that society looks down on this because she, quote-unquote, loves her children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But well, that's a common theme you're going to see that's going to unite the story that's happening in Florida with the one that's happening in Southern California.
No, doesn't...
It's nobody's fault.
Doesn't somebody somewhere along the way have to say at some point, it seems to me, although... As I say this, I can just hear the people rejecting what I'm about to say. Does anybody care about the children?
Right.
Don't we have a not just a biblical or religious burden to care about children?
Mm-hmm.
The children are among us, but don't we have a civil responsibility to care about children? Now, this woman has brought 14 children into the world,
mm-hmm,
by her own instrumentation. This is her and her alone. She has done this. She and she alone, I guess I should say. And now they have 14 children under the age of 7, I believe. She has no job. She has no prospects for a way to support these children. That would seem to me to be a problem. And saying, I love my children, doesn't address the needs of those kids.
Right.
So over in Florida, we've got a woman who goes in to kill her child, comes out with a killed child, but now she doesn't like that. We have a woman who has 14 children in California who says, I love my children, and I guess we're all supposed to say, well, that's fine, that's good enough. And I don't see it that way. I think these children are at risk. And It seems that if you're pro-life, in spite of the fact that she's apparently very pro-life, she has set herself up as the god of her existence. She says, I want to have kids. Her quote was, all I wanted was children.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's decided to have them. And the woman in Florida, she made her decision to kill her child. In each case, it seems to me that both of those actions are far, far from the will of God.
Isn't that the first and greatest sin? You know, greatest speaking of the one sin from which, you know, all the other ones, commandments are broken. But to put anything or anyone in the place of the one true God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, you shall have no other gods, God says in the first commandment. And what we see so often in our culture today is that the God that replaces the one true God is the God of self. And so whatever I want is supreme. And so that's my desire, therefore I will do whatever it takes to get what I want. But then what also is interesting is that the one true God is responsible for all that he has done, all that he has made. But we as gods want to be God, but then all of a sudden we don't want to actually bear the responsibility for it. You know, we want to claim, as we hear there, that we're a victim. I think that's a common theme in addition to the fact of wanting to be in total control of a situation and set ourselves up as a god. Also something that's going to be a common bond between these two stories in Florida and California is that no one wants to take responsibility for their action. The woman giving birth is a victim. The doctor who administered the in vitro fertilization will somehow be a victim. And then in Florida, of course, you know, the woman who goes in with the plans to be to have her child aborted, and then it's botched, and she's all of a sudden a victim of the whole process. The person working there, perhaps owning the company, who makes that decision to put the child into a bag and dispose of it with the trash, they will become a victim somehow. You know, they will want to plead their innocence. And then, of course, the doctor who's now lost his license will claim that he's just a victim of what someone else did to him, and he's not at fault. But where comes the point of personal responsibility? That is the biggest thing that I think is most evident in all of these stories that we're hearing, that there is a lack of personal responsibility for the decisions that we make and the actions that we take.
So then the conclusion that I think we're drawing here is that the botched abortion in Florida and the 14 children in California are both violations of the first commandment.
Now, there are certainly aspects of both stories that speak to that.
As a pastor, you probably, I don't know, do you thank God that you're not either one of these, you're not a pastor to any of the people involved in this? So that you can kind of watch it from afar. But you have to say to yourself, I would think, Pastor Alexander, particularly since you're a very young man in the ministry, and the slippery slope that we seem to be on has become steep.
Right.
We seem to be in a headlong plunge into some of the most grievous behavior that we've ever seen. This is going to reach you eventually. You know
sure.
that, don't you?
Sure, absolutely.
And then what?
You deal with it. I mean, you have to deal with that and know that the Lord will give you strength and wisdom in the way that you need it. And I'm confident that any pastors who are ministering to the people affected by this are going to receive that strength and wisdom from the Lord. You know, it says in the book of James that if any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask of God, and he will give it in abundance. And I definitely pray for that wisdom for those people, those Christ followers and pastors who have a chance to minister to the broken people involved in these situations. And just as much as I ask God for wisdom daily in dealing with the particular life situations that are in my congregation, in my community that I do deal with as a pastor, I think that both of these issues also points out that as people who are pro-life, who believe in the sanctity and the value of human life, as I would say from the womb to the tomb, you know, entire life, both the unborn children and the people who are convalescing in nursing homes and everybody in between, that it is a messy, messy situation to be in. And it's a difficult challenge to speak up for life, and there's a lot of debate and a lot of different angles that it all takes, but ultimately our call from God is to follow Him with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and continue to seek His will and ask for wisdom from Him in dealing with these particular situations in life.
One of the words that I heard Dr. Weiss use earlier this week on our morning show with Paul Clayton, as they discussed this octuplet situation, was commodification, which I thought was an excellent word. He is referring now to children like the children that we're talking about here today as commodities. We have somehow succeeded in our country to dehumanizing children to the point where we don't think of them as human beings
right.
anymore.
Right.
They're commodities. So if you want to do the get rid of the commodity thing, you go to the abortion clinic.
Sure.
If you want to have 8 babies, you go to the fertility clinic. Whatever it is that you want to do, apparently we feel that we have the right privilege to commodify little children like this.
Right. Yeah,
and
that's a good insight on what's going on here.
I fear for our country. I fear for our people, and I fear most of all for our children. If we have, I realize this is a provocative thing to say, but I'm asking it in all seriousness. If babies are just commodities, and they're not really human beings until we decide, oh, it's okay, you can be a human being now, how does that make us different from Nazi Germany?
Sure, exactly. And I hope that there comes a day, I pray for the day, where just as in Germany today, they look back at the period of the Nazi regime with corporate shame and just embarrassment of what was allowed to take place there. I hope that we do that someday as well, that our children and grandchildren will look back and say, I can't believe that those things happened in our country, and we say never again. Never again. And I pray for that. And I think that we need to pray for one another and encourage one another all the more until that day when Christ returns in glory. Because, you know, Jesus never promises that it's going to be easy. And in so many ways, the cross that we bear in society today is to be an advocate and a spokesperson for the gift of life which God has given. And that is a challenging call, but it's a call that comes from God, and it's definitely worth the challenge.
It's a tough subject. I thank you for sharing time and tackling it with us here.
Thank you, Chuck. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Pastor Jeffrey Alexander here on our Bible study, Ask the Pastor program. He is pastor at Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Greenwood, Indiana. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the phone call.
Listen to Chuck Ratherton and guests Monday through Friday at this same time on the Bible study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for the Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the Internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of the Bible Study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible Study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.